Yes. Yeah, that's a thing. And it's been hard for me to accept that too as a
Yep.
clinician. And it's been hard for me not to justify that it's just something that they're hearing and talking about, but it's an actual real thing that there's 5, 6, 7 year olds out there not wanting to be around anymore.
Would that be anything you were seeing as you started practicing?
It was very much an outlier when I
Okay.
first started practicing. Now it's enough of a regular occurrence that every child who comes into my office is assessed for suicidality.
Our children are leaving the faith in droves. As a result.
Oh, I got to pause here.
We're going live right now.
How can we raise our kids to stand firm, have a faith that lasts, and navigate such a time as this?
Our nation's capital has just been.
To turn a nation, you have to take the next generation.
Today in the news, COVID-19 numbers.
I'm Jake McCandless, and this is my podcast, Stand Firm Parents. We're working together to help our children have a faith that lasts.
And now, here's Jake McCandless.
Well, parents, in this episode, we're going to dial back the heat on you directly, but I think there's still going to be some heat. So we're still in the middle of our series, Hello to Emotional Health, really just laying an introduction to, as parents who are intentional, like you, who are doing everything they can to help their child come to know Christ and follow Him for the rest of their days. You are doing so much. You're doing it intentionally. But an area that gets missed, and I know it has for my life and for my parenting, is the emotional and mental health. So I wanted to pause and just bring this into the light, put it on your radar. So we've been talking about your mental and emotional health. Well, we also need to be considering the mental and emotional health of our children, and maybe more than ever, because the generation preceding this generation has been dubbed the anxious generation, and the trend has done nothing but climb. That's where we're at. So we're going to talk about, as parents, how do we deal with our children and their emotional health? And we do that with a very special guest today, Temple Carson. And we're going to lean in to her experience as a therapist, but also we're going to talk about a book that came out a few years ago called The Anxious Generation by Jonathan Haidt. In that book, he provides research and talks about just how much anxiety children and teens are dealing with. I feel like you may have heard of that book. Maybe you've even dove into some interviews with him and on that subject. And so we're going to talk a bit about what's found in that book. But even more than that, Temple is a licensed professional counselor, supervisor, licensed marriage and family therapist supervisor, registered play therapist supervisor. She also teaches in the graduate counseling program at John Brown University. But even more than that, Temple is right in the middle of what families and kids are facing. She spent years helping children, teens, and parents walk through trauma, anxiety, and emotional health. She is also the wife of a good friend of mine, longtime student pastor, pastor of families currently, Dan Carson, who is also the director of Student Ministry Matters and has a podcast as well called Student Ministry Matters. You need to check it out. I'm sure he won't mind me giving a plug. And Temple has just finished doing a breakout session at the Student Ministry Matters Student Workers Retreat, helping leaders engage with the anxious generation. So yeah, she knows her stuff. I'm excited about this conversation. I'm real excited, as I said, about our guest today for this episode. And she is no stranger to LifeWord. And so Temple was in the youth group of the director of LifeWord, Donnie Parrish. And so no stranger there and no stranger to this building where I'm at, because also we have BMA Missions and she has done some counseling there with missionaries and missionary families. Super excited about this conversation. Temple, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
And so you have a vast amount of experience and I'm just excited to dive in. We've been talking about how as parents we need to be emotionally healthy, mentally healthy. We need to do that for our kids, and our kids really need it. And so you have seen and are seeing the mental health and emotional health of children. I mean, you're doing it from like a 360 view, a panoramic view, as a therapist for children and families, as a supervisor for new therapists, as a college instructor at John Brown, a youth pastor's wife and mom. is the emotional and mental health of our children something we need on our radar?
Well, it is from my perspective, but I am immersed in it every day. But I do think that it is something that is on the rise.
So that would keep us in a feedback loop. That was something you taught me as we were having a pre-conversation about this. It could be tempting to say, somebody could say, well, yeah, of course it's important to you. It'd be a feedback loop, right?
Right. You know what you see every day.
But you are seeing trends, and we're going to talk about some research from the book, The Anxious Generation, and it talks about some research and trends, but you've seen it as well. So what are the trends that you are seeing with teens and children today regarding mental health?
I have been a practicing professional clinician since 2009. And since that time, I have seen a rise in diagnosable, like actually diagnosed anxiety, not just that the child is anxious, but something that fits all the criteria for DSM diagnosis on the rise. I've seen it not just in what we consider typical childhood diagnoses, such as separation anxiety and generalized anxiety disorder, but I've seen in the last couple of years, especially a rise in more complex diagnoses, such as obsessive compulsive disorder that you generally don't see in younger children. You know, when I first started, it was pretty rare to see a 6, 7, 8-year-old that could actually qualify for an OCD diagnosis. And I'm seeing that more and more nowadays. I'm seeing more depression. I'm seeing more suicidality and suicidal ideation in younger children, very young, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. And the impact on the families. And I'm seeing a lot of parents themselves that also have anxiety disorders.
Okay, you just rocked my world talking about 5, 6-year-olds talking about suicide. That's a thing?
Yes. Yeah, that's a thing. And it's been hard for me to accept that too as a clinician. Yep. And it's been hard for me not to justify that it's just something that they're hearing and talking about, but it's an actual real thing that there's 5, 6, 7-year-olds out there not wanting to be around anymore.
Would that be anything you were seeing as you started practicing?
It was very much an outlier when I first started practicing. Now it's enough of a regular occurrence that every child who comes into my office is assessed for suicidality.
Wow, that's wild. And you made the distinction, you said diagnosable anxiety, because I think anecdotally we could say, well, people are more stressed out, people are more anxious, these type things. But you're saying, you know, as someone who's making a diagnosis, this is the case.
And it's the criteria for the diagnostic statistical manual and down the line.
Wow. So how do you describe anxiety?
Anxiety, well, that's a good question, because it's easy to see anxiety when we kind of put it next to fear. So fear is a very appropriate response to something that is happening in front of us. It is there for safety. It is like, you know, when you walk in front, when you walk into a street and a car almost hits you, you're going to feel scared and you're going to leave. And that's a very good thing for us to have. So fear can be a very healthy response that we need to have. But anxiety is more like the anticipation of something bad that hasn't happened yet. So anxiety is more about our fear of the future or fear of what's going to happen, our worry, the ruminating thoughts, those thoughts we have over and over in our mind of what if this happens, what if that happens, what if this happens. That's more of a just an anticipated fear for things that have yet to happen. And we don't really know if they're going to happen or not, but the anxiety is real.
Wow. And so you're also, when you're talking about that, you're also talking about how that just, it can be crippling, right? I mean, even for children and teens.
There's a lot of complex systems that are going on in the body, a lot of fight flight responses that kind of goes beyond that. That's a simplistic way to look at it, but a lot of polyvagal, if you're familiar with that terminology.
No, I'm not.
A lot of things that are happening in the body physically and biologically that pull into an anxiety response. So you'll have like a dump of a stress hormone in your system, and you'll have sweaty palms, and you'll have a headache, and you'll have a stiff neck, and you'll have an upset stomach. Kids especially have upset stomachs and headaches a lot, because that's where their somatic symptoms usually occur. And all of that in anticipation of an event that hasn't happened yet, and you're not even certain if it's going to happen, but your body is convinced that it's going to, and you are in danger.
Well, and as you're describing it, I'm hearing verses. The do not worry type versus the do not fear versus.
Yeah.
Because I think we talk about anxiety and maybe don't make the connection. And I mean, what you're saying there's verses that speak directly to this.
Sure. So the verses that we have, I think, they talk about do not fear and do not worry because we have faith in a God who is able to hold the future for us. Right. So yeah. We're not supposed to be worrying about the future, supposed to is in quotation marks, because we have a God who is sovereign and is over all of that. However, sometimes our bodies don't get that memo.
Yes.
And does it mean that our faith is off or that we are bad Christians or that we're not believing in God's sovereignty? But there are physiological things happening in our body that can kind of overwhelm that and feel separate from our thought process.
I'm glad we went there. That was not on script. I went off script to ask that because I think a lot of, I have heard, and I just heard a story last night of someone who came to a pastor and said they're struggling with anxiety. And they said, well, you just need to believe. You just need to have faith. And didn't even take into account what was going on in her life and all of these things and just the impact that had. And what we're talking about is it is, you know, what the Bible is speaking to, but it's actually manifesting in physical ways, in emotional ways in our bodies, as you're saying. So it's a lot of times not something that we've got to work through that to then get to the point maybe to be able to practice. Like I would say, even leaning into therapy is a way to move towards not fearing and not worrying as well.
Well, I would agree with that. But also, you know, I think that part of the problem is that secular theoretical language doesn't always dovetail perfectly with biblical language.
Yeah.
So in the biblical text, it talks a lot about our mind, body, and soul.
Yes.
And the importance of trusting God with our mind or loving God with our heart or somebody, you know, mind, soul, all of those three areas. Well, in the more secular area, they talk about the same thing, but in the realm of like cognitive behavioral therapy, they talk about thinking, feeling, doing.
Wow.
It's the same thing.
Yes.
Different terminology. And so the idea is that we are not just solely thinking people. We are also feeling people. We are also body doing somatic people. We do have things show up in our body that is not available and accessible by our thoughts. And so we are all three of those things. We are mind, heart, and soul. We are thinking, feeling, and doing.
I love that. I'm marking the tape there because I want to make sure that clip goes, because that's how we started this series, Hello to Emotional Health. We started with that passage with that. Okay, so you've talked about what you've seen, and that's really what I wanted to start with because you've got tons of experience. You've seen it. But there's a book, The Anxious Generation by Jonathan Haidt, and yeah. You're actually teaching on this, or have at this point taught on it, at a youth workers retreat. And that's where we started the conversation, and he provides research about, I mean, he calls this an anxious generation. In his research, he found that the Gen Z kids that, you know, so he found this increasing anxiety. But one of the things that you pointed out to me as we first had this conversation, these were Gen Z kids. These aren't necessarily the kids in our homes. Could you touch on what he found in his research and then maybe where we're at now?
Certainly. And we have to remember that it takes a while for the intel and the data to catch up to every day. He had to gather all this intel and all this data in order to write the book. So he can't write it on kids today. So it's about Gen Z, which is roughly 1995 to 2010-ish, depending on, you know, who you're talking to. And those generational beginning and endings are always a little mobile anyways to take into account factors that
and that's birth dates, right? You're talking about those dates.
Yes,
that you
birth
give.
Dates.
Yeah.
So this is people that are born from 1995-ish to about 2010, maybe 2015.
Okay.
This is where this intelligence and this data and all of this research was focused on this generation, which we call Generation Z, which actually is the generation of my children. And so I have people in my office today who are coming to therapy with their children who are Gen Z parents.
Wow.
Yeah, it does feel kind of mind-blowing. I have a lot of millennial parents, and that would be expected, but I'm starting to get some Gen Z parents in there.
I think it's good for us parents listening in and believers, because I think, you know, you may at work and you work with someone younger and you just talk about them being a millennial, and millennials are older now. I'm right below a millennial and are the start of the millennials. So, we're already past Gen Z. But so what did he find with Gen Z, with your kids?
Sure. He found that there was a very significant change in these children, even from millennial and certainly from previous generations. I'm a Gen Xer, so this is all stuff that was kind of new to me as parenting. But what he found was kind of twofold. So he found that beginning in 2007, when iPhones came out, that around the same time, there was an uptake in social media, that social media really became prevalent at that time. And where previously, like Facebook and things like that, you used to have to go on your laptop to access these things, so that when kids were getting onto Facebook or MySpace, if you remember that,
yes,
they were doing it in their home without complete privacy.
Right.
Somebody was there somewhere, even if they weren't actively looking over their shoulder. Well, what happened when iPhones came out is that now we took all the power of a laptop computer or a monitor, the big computer, and they put it in a phone that fit in your hands.
Yeah.
So now these children had access to social media, internet, online gaming, all sorts of things in the palm of their hands, which of course was mobile and they could take outside of their homes. And so that created a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of social intelligence that's needed to navigate through social media. There's a lot of emotional maturity that's needed to navigate through social media that these children did not have.
Yeah.
And so they're at a pivotal time in their life, early adolescence, that 9 to 15 age period is what was really being hit hard.
Wow.
And then, of course, with girls, you have all the comparison. And with boys, we have other things going on.
Yeah.
But it wasn't great for either one. And then a parallel process was that at the same time, parents were becoming more concerned with safety. So he calls it safetyism. That this idea that we have to protect our children, and children are no longer able to do what they were able to do before. We saw a lot of helicopter parents. There's a new term that came out around that time that is called lawnmower parenting, that parents became hypersensitive to issues of safety. So what happened is that children were not going outside as much and they were inside more. And so now we have availed access to internet and to social media, plus children who are not outside. So he says that it turned from play-based childhood to phone-based childhood.
We're gonna pause right there. Yeah, do you remember as a kid when parents are yelling at you, hey, it's supper time, you've gotta stop whatever you're doing, you know, stop the video game, stop playing, it's time to come to dinner? Well, I've been told my episodes are creeping a little bit too long. So now, I fixed it. Just we'll cut them in half. How about we do that? Just gonna cut them in half. So that was part one. Next week, you're getting part two. You've been listening to Stand Firm Parents. Stand Firm Parents is a production of Stand Firm Ministries in partnership with LifeWord Studios, created by Jake McCandless and Brandon Harrington of Dime Collective. Again, thank you for listening, and be sure to subscribe, share, and most importantly, stand firm.